And now for reading and writing and radio.
It is a scorching summer day in 1917. Grandpa and everybody are busy haying. The job takes more men than Grandpa has. He signs on an itinerant laborer, a huge Sicilian with a black, bushy mustache. The Sicilian works in the loft of the side barn, pitching the hay into the corners after the hay fork has dropped it. Late in the afternoon, Grandpa climbs a ladder against the wall of hay that now fills the barn and peers over the top of it. Heat sears his face. The loft is like an oven. The Sicilian is there, stripped to the waist and covered with dust. His body is channeled with gleaming rivulets of sweat. He sees Grandpa, makes a menacing face, and slashes his finger across his throat. Grandpa ducks his head like a gopher into its hole and beats a hasty retreat down the ladder. At the end of the day, he pays the Sicilian and lets him go. "I don't know if he means to slit his own throat or mine," says Grandpa ruefully. "Either way, I figure it'd be a messy business."
The author of that story, Around the Round Barn, is Jackie Jackson. But don't slit your throat. It could be you. WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
Before is a request. Next month we have a program on adoption. If any of you adopted kids have some thoughts on this subject and would like to be on this program, tell your teacher and check with your parents and then send me your name and number here at WSSR. Well, I'm still working on my book, The Round Barn. As those of you know who've listened last year or the year before, it's a kind of autobiography. That means story of my life. But this is an expanded autobiography to include my father and grandfather's lives and the life of the farm I grew up on, anything that happened on that farm or in town or anywhere that has something to do with the farm, I include them all. So, our next story is when my father was little, and it's about another day laborer, another itinerant laborer whose name that nobody remembers. Ronald is 10. It is summer. The men are filling the silo for the first time. Ronald watches. The horses pull the wagons of corn stalks onto the barn floor. The wagons have neat bundles of stalks piled up in rows on the wagons. A man slings a bundle to the loader. The loader cuts the twine on the bundle and feeds the bundle, stalks, leaves, corn ears, still in their green husks, everything, into a trough where a rotating belt feeds the stalks into the knives of the chopper. The knives chop the corn, and a fan blows the silage up a long tube into the top of the silo, where it rains down, gradually filling up the great cement cylinder. The chopper blower is powered by a 25-horsepower motor. Inside the silo is a man with a pitchfork. He is not a regular farmhand. He is an itinerant who needed work, and Grandpa hired him. Extra hands are often needed in the summer. His job is to spread the silage around the silo so that it will ferment properly. Ronald watches the bundles of corn stalks going along the belt into the chopper. He watches the knives grab them. It's a noisy process. The motor, the grinding whirl of the chopper and fan blades, the shooshy rattle as the corn is both blasted and blown up the tube. With his eyes, Ronald follows the tube to the top of the silo where it bends and the end of it pokes in through one of the windows of the wooden part. He is curious to see what the silage looks like falling down into the silo on the inside. He slides into the shaft. He climbs up the rungs. He gets to the silage level and can see the silage raining down from far above. He climbs a little higher to get a better view. The silage is not all spread out. There is a mound of silage, a small pyramid. The pyramid is growing as the silage rains down on it. He sees a pair of boots sticking out from under the pyramid. He skins down the rungs as fast as he can, swings out onto the barn floor, screeching. He screeches over the noise of the machinery. Stop, stop, he's buried up there. You're burying him in silage. He pounds on the loader's arm. The men stop the machinery. They leap into the shaft and disappear up it. Ronald follows at their heels. He is in time to see them hauling the worker out from under the silage by his boots. The worker is still alive. He is not yet suffocated. Ronald has saved his life. They lower him down the chute. It is not easy. They prop him in the hay. When he recovers, Grandpa fires him. It takes him a while to recover, though, for he is very drunk. If Ronald had not discovered him, they would have had pickled farmhand. The next spring, when one of the hired men is pitching down silage, he uncovers the whiskey bottle. The next story is another one, with my father in it and about my grandfather, taking place at about the same time, about 1915. Ronald is 13. It is late autumn. It is supper time at the big house. Grandpa is at the head of the table. Grandma is at his right. Ronald and Trevor and the hired men are in their places. The hired men have on clean shirts and trousers and have showered and have their hair slicked back. There are fried potatoes on the table in a dish on the snowy tablecloth and pitchers of milk and slices of cold meat and bread and butter and fresh applesauce and creamed carrots. Grandpa has said the blessing. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me. Bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits. The food is passed. People begin to eat. Grandpa looks around the table. He says, I saw a sight today I have never seen before, and I hope I shall never see again. Everyone pauses in their eating to pay attention to Daddy Dogan. I went over to Tiffany very early this morning to buy a cow, Grandpa says. Everyone nods. They know where Grandpa went and that he returned with a cow. It was still dark when I got there, says Grandpa, and I saw a light in the barn. I went in and saw a lantern way down at the end of the row of cows. Someone was milking down there, so I walked down to see who. And as I got close, I saw it was a little lad, and he seemed to be milking in an odd sort of manner. Grandpa has everyone's complete attention. It was chilly this morning, says Grandpa. There was frost. Everyone nods. The little boy was barefoot, Grandpa says, and when I got up to him, I saw that he was balancing himself on the milking stool with one foot and holding the other over the bucket. Grandpa pushes back his chair and demonstrates, and milking the stream of warm milk onto that dirty little foot. And when that foot was warm, he put it down on the stall floor and raised his other dirty little foot and milked onto that one. The gathering is thunderstruck. Grandpa looks at their stunned faces and laughs silently. His eyes disappear. Then everyone explodes into laughter. When the hubbub dies down, Grandma declares, Wesson, that can't be true. Wesson assures her it is. Ronald shouts into his father's ear trumpet, Did you say anything to anybody? Did you tell his father or his mother? Grandpa laughs and shakes his head no. The wife asked me in for a cup of coffee and a piece of pie, Grandpa says. He adds, I drank the coffee black. Our next story deals with my brother when he was a little boy. This would be about 1940. It's a hot summer day. Craig and his friends, John Eldred, Ed Gretzner, and Delmar DeLong, and some of those you remember from the manure trolley, those of you that listened year before last, they are riding home from Aquanago. They have just spent a glorious week at the Phantom Lake YMCA camp, and now Grandpa has fetched them in the Blue Dodge. As they drive through the Wisconsin countryside, the day gets hotter and hotter. The boys are thirsty. They talk among themselves of pop and root beer. Craig indicates to Grandpa that they are all thirsty. He makes a strangling motion with his hands around his neck, takes a long drink from an imaginary bottle of pop, heaves a sigh of great satisfaction, and then looks expectantly at Grandpa. Grandpa glances over at the pantomime while driving. At the end of it, he nods. You boys are thirsty. Craig beams and nods vigorously. The three in the back seat nod and beam, too. When we get to Delavan, Grandpa says, I'll get you lads the best drink in town. The boys are rapturous. They discuss what the drink can be. Ordinary bottled pop, obtainable anywhere, doesn't seem to fit the definition. Grandpa must know of an ice cream shop in Delavan that sells superior ice cream sodas, malteds, and black cows. Jiggle on the seats and wait impatiently for the miles to roll by. They talk and talk about what can be the best drink in town. No parched castaways bobbing on their ocean raft could have covered the topic more thoroughly. At last they arrive in Delavan. Grandpa slows down for the residential section, and Craig again throttles himself to remind Grandpa of his promise. Grandpa nods and repeats, the best drink in town. And you listeners have to remember, of course, that Grandpa is deaf and can't hear the boys. At the business district, they hang out the windows, trying to spot where Grandpa is planning to treat them. There's a drugstore, cries John. There's an ice cream parlor, yips Delmar. Grandpa slows and turns off the main street. He drives to the end of the block and pulls the car to the curb. The boys jump out, looking for the store. Grandpa clambers out, too. Here it is, laddies, he announces. The best drink in town. The boys whirl. They hadn't even noticed it, but Grandpa is bending and drinking from an ornamental porcelain bubbler at the edge of the sidewalk. It has a basin circling the bottom so that even dogs can drink. Help yourselves, Grandpa says, straightening up and wiping his mouth. Drink all you want. His face is alight with pleasure. He hasn't the slightest idea that he has disappointed anybody. This water is from an artesian well. The rains that formed it fell north of Baraboo thousands of years ago and have been percolating down here ever since. The boys look at each other. They have all had a long enough acquaintance with Grandpa Dogan to know better than to argue or explain their expectations. Baraboo, mutters Ed. Crestfallen, they take turns drinking from the best drink in town. And when my brother told me that story recently, he says, now, of course, I know that it's the best drink in town. But he said, back then, we were awfully disappointed. And then this story is a true story, too, and it's about my brother and my sisters and myself. It's a sunny fall day, and Jackie, Craig, Patsy, and Joanne are playing house in the corn-shock teepees in the field across Collie Road. Jackie is 7. She has played house in corn shocks every fall since she was born. A corn shock is made of bundles of corn stalks stacked upright against each other, and the way to turn one into a house is like this. You select a teepee that has a likely gap between the bottoms of two bundles. You pull and push to make the gap bigger, and then down on your knees and stomach, shove and hunch and worm your way into the shock. In the middle, there is usually a little space where the original two or three bundles were propped together, tripod fashion, to start the shock. Here you can almost sit up, and by more shoving with arms and shoulders and back and feet, you can either move or compact the stalks till you have a little parlor with space to entertain one or two cramped visitors. You burrow out to make a back door, too. Once the house is finished, you visit back and forth across the corn row stubble to other houses. You bring out your dolls for your larder, a small adjoining room, you carry out chocolate milk and orange, and you raid the orchard for apples and the garden for anything still on the ground, such as carrots. This fall, Patsy is being very mysterious about her house. She won't let anyone in. But after a bit, she has to fare forth for more materials, and then they see what she is up to. She is paving her house. She has husked the dry corn ears from all around the exposed stalks inside and outside her house and hammered them into the ground like bricks. Now she goes around to the other corn shocks and gathers more ears. She plans to pave her house all the way from its front entrance through to the little center room and out the back door. Jackie marvels. A yellow floor! It is hard, and each brick is slightly humped, and the whole pavement has a pebbled effect on account of the kernels. Craig and Joanne also admire the improvement. Their own dirt floors now look dismally shabby. Patsy explains how she had had her happy inspiration, while the rest rushed to husk ears and pave their houses, too. In a short while, all the house entrances are a glitter in the autumn sunshine. Joanne arranges her ears in a crisscross fashion to make a parquet floor. Patsy finishes and adds a vestibule. They all save the dry brown corn silk to make little pillows, for the gleaming floors are not too comfortable to sit on. They see Grandpa heading toward the orchard. They hail him. They want him to come into the field and look astonished at their houses. They want him to burrow on his hands and knees over their elegant yellow pavements. Grandpa sees their beckoning. He veers and comes across the stubble. His face is filled with mirth. Patsy rushes to show her house first because she had the idea, and besides, hers is finished. Grandpa beams until he gets to Patsy's door. Suddenly, his face changes. It becomes very stern. He bends and looks into Patsy's house. He stands up again and looks at the other three houses. All the while, he shakes and shakes his head. Patsy and Joanne, Craig and Jackie are dashed. "Cubbies," says Grandpa finally, "don't you know why the corn is shocked this way?" The four shake no. "It is to keep the corn dry during the winter so that, as it's needed, the men can load it and bring it into the barn for the animals. This way the corn will freeze into the ground. The kernels will rot. You'll have to dig it all up and bring it into the corn crib." Grandpa squats and digs up an ear from Joanne's patterned hallway. He turns it over. Mud is caked between the kernels. He shakes his head again. "You'll have to take a stout brush and get out all the dirt, too," says Grandpa. The four stand dispirited as Grandpa leaves. Then they begin prying up their pavements. "Well," says Craig, "I'm glad I only got mine half done." "You can go get the wagon," says Joanne shortly. Craig fetches the red wagon. He brings a stiff brush from the barn. It takes several hours and many trips to get all the corn to the corn crib. They can't pile the wagon very high or the corn falls out. Even level, the corn bounces out as the wagon bumps over the ridges in the field. It is an unhappy job. They are snapping and snarling at each other before it is over. As they are hauling in the last load, Grandpa comes out of the tool house. They indicate to him that they are finished. They offer an ear for his inspection. They pant and groan and roll their eyes to show him what a hard job it has been. Grandpa nods approval. His silent laughter is sympathetic. He says, "You've heard of heaven, where all good cubbies go?" The four nod. "And that the streets there are paved with gold?" The four nod again. "Well," says Grandpa, "when St. John had his vision and wrote it all down, he forgot to tell us an important detail. But I had my own vision this afternoon, and now I believe I can fill in the scriptures." His eyes twinkle. "It stands to reason, don't you think, that the Lord would have nothing but the finest sort of gold?" The four begin to smile, too. Grandpa bobs his head vigorously. "I think," he finishes, "that when we all get up to heaven, we'll find that the streets are paved with golden ears of corn." Well, that's all that we have time for today. And for your writing, how about not waiting until you're my age to write down your own stories, your own autobiography? Write down the things of interest about you and your family with plenty of details and feelings and he says's and she says's. And also ask your parents and your grandparents, your aunts and your uncles, about stories from their lives, things that they remember that'd make a round barn type story.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.